I don't know of many people who are sitting around in their house or their apartment and light bulb goes on over their head and they think, yeah, you know what? I am going to make a fake press pass and go to Iraq and take a digital camera and see what the story is over there. But that's exactly what our next guest did. His name is Mike Shiley, and he's in town to show his movie called Inside Iraq, The Untold Stories. He'll be at Wash U for two shows tonight at the Graham Chapel at 6 and 8:30, and then back next week at Fontbonne University in the library at 7 o'clock on next Thursday night. So welcome to St. Louis.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Can I see your ID?
I can't find it, actually.
Is it true that you actually went to Kinko's and made your own press pass?
It is true, yes. I went to Kinko's. I made a press pass saying that I was an ABC News reporter.
Had you had any dealings with ABC?
No, actually, I hadn't. I had some local contacts with my ABC station, but they were not wanting to issue me a press pass.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went onto the internet and rented a used bulletproof vest from a website in Miami. Thank God for Miami, we can rent bulletproof vests. didn't have enough money to rent a new one, so I had to rent a used one.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't sure if that meant it was bloodstained and bullet hole.
Yeah, were there dents or dings in it when you got it?
No, there was just sweat, drenched in sweat.
Okay.
Then I cashed in airline miles, and I flew over to Amman, Jordan, where I presented my press pass to ABC News, who let me in. I went to Baghdad.
Ho, ho, ho. ABC News was so good at what they do that they looked at your fake press pass and said, okay, he's with us.
Well, actually, my fake press pass looked better than their real press passes.
So. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I got in, and when the other national reporters were sequestered in the area and not going out and filming the stories on the streets, they were subbing it out to the local Iraqi TV crews. I grabbed a camera unarmed by myself with just a guide, and for a month I traveled north, south, east, west through Iraq with no plan, no guide, nothing, just filming whatever stories come my way. And I tried to do it from the perspective of a nonpartisan person, just from the perspective of the Iraqi people and what's happening on the ground.
All right. Now, when was this, 2003 and 4?
Yes. This was the first Christmas right after we captured Saddam Hussein, and it was 03, 04, which makes the footage special because there's no way I could have filmed this today.
What do you mean?
Well, insurgent attacks were only 14 attacks a day when I was there. Now they're over 1,000 a week.
Mm-hmm.
So the places that I went to, some of them don't exist anymore because they've been blown up.
Mm-hmm.
Others would be so dangerous for a person to go there, a Westerner to go there, that you'd be killed or kidnapped almost immediately.
Okay. So when you're going to Iraq, Christmas of 2003, do you speak Arabic?
I can speak a little bit of Arabic. I lived in the Middle East for a year. I lived in Egypt, and I've traveled through the Middle East, so I'm familiar with the culture. But I still needed a guide.
Mm-hmm. So you just found somebody locally, and you said, come on, you're going with me. Here's a couple of dollars. Let's go.
ABC News, for $50 a day, provided me with a young, up-and-coming guide looking for some work. So
mm-hmm.
bilingual, and so we hit it off.
Okay. Now, I know you went to the Kurdish part of Iraq, which mm-hmm. is the peaceful part of Iraq where they love America.
Correct.
How far south do you have to go before that's not true anymore?
Just across the border of Iraqi Kurdistan, which is the area that they live in, that they've partitioned off, that they call that's their land.
Mm-hmm.
Just step 1 foot across their area and you're into the part where it's not safe to be at all.
How unsafe was it for you?
Well, Iraq is very strange because it seems like it's completely safe, and then all of a sudden an IED or a car bomb goes off. So you're either in it or you're not in it. There's no warning. There's no dodging a bullet. You either are kidnapped, killed, or part of an explosion, or you went through the day thinking, hey, Iraq's not so dangerous.
Mm.
That's the weird thing about it.
Now, I haven't seen your movie, although I really would like to, but I've been reading about it, and I understand that at one point you heard an IED explosion, grabbed your camera and ran toward it, and then found out that there's a little trick behind the IED explosion that comes later.
Yes, and that is that they detonate the explosion, they wait for the Westerners to run in, to the U.S. military and journalists to run in and film it, and then they open fire with AK-47s or send in a second IED or car bomb.
Mm.
And that's how they can maximize their casualties.
Okay, we keep using the third-person plural word, they. Who is they?
Who is they? Well, they are some people describe them as terrorists. Others call them insurgents. Some call them freedom fighters. It's the people that are opposed to the U.S. military presence in Iraq and the people that are fighting to gain media attention through heinous acts of violence.
Mostly Shia, mostly Sunni, or both?
Mostly Sunni, because that's their brand of communication is through those types of acts. But the Shia run sort of more mob-style death squads and more uniformed police officers taking you to the Interior Ministry to pull your fingernails
out. Like the Mahdi Army, for instance.
Correct. Yes correct.
Okay.
And you have all your fingernails, by the way.
I do.
So
I do.
Yeah. Talking with Mike Shiley, the director and cameraman and star and everything else of the documentary Inside Iraq, The Untold Stories, which he's been showing around the country and, in fact, around the world and gone to film festivals and won plenty of awards for. And it'll be screened tonight at Washington University at 6 and 8:30 p.m. if you'd like to go take a look at it. Tell me what the reaction of Iraqi citizens was to you and your digital camera.
Well, I had a hard time getting the Iraqis to speak to me on the streets because here's a white guy with short hair with a video camera traipsing around on the streets, which is something totally unheard of for them. And while they were friendly and they were very nice and they were welcoming to me, they were not really ready to tackle the hard issues in front of 500 of their new friends, mm-hmm. On the streets. And so the style of the film is more my narration of what I saw, my description of what I saw. But the Iraqi people, when I was there, were happy to see us. I think that they expected that because America was coming into their country, they were going to be receiving a small slice of the American dream. And that's what was sort of packaged to them. And over time, especially after the first deployment went back home, which was, I think, the linchpin in this, is that they began to realize that American dream was not going to happen. And not only was it not going to happen, but they were being plunged into an environment that was far worse than it was ever when Saddam Hussein was in power.
Really?
Absolutely.
They told you that it's worse, and this again was in December of 2003. They said to you it's worse now than it was just a year ago?
Yes. The way that they described it to me is they said that they went from the devil that they knew to the thousand devils that they don't know.
Mm.
And it's not just necessarily the U.S. military there. It's all the other nasty things that have come up in Iraq as a result of Saddam Hussein going away.
So the devil could also be other Iraqis or foreigners who've come into their country to create havoc.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. They're not just simply referring to us as the thousand other devils, but we certainly took our foot off the out of the dike, and it all released.
Now, we always hear from people who have members of their family serving over there that the mainstream media isn't telling the story.
Correct.
You went over there to tell the story, and I want to ask you about a part of the story that lots of people claim isn't being told, which is schools are being built. There's peace in many cities. Businesses are being taken care of. The electricity is on. The oil is flowing. These stories are not being told because bombs are going off. Even First Lady Laura Bush said this as recently as Monday of this week. So where you traveled around the country and you went north, east, south, west, where did you see those things being true?
Well, the answer to that question, as it is for most questions about Iraq, is yes and no. Yes, the media focuses on two things, car bombs and press conferences. That's what they focus on. And as a result, they don't focus on a lot of other things. Now, Iraq has 1,000 insurgent attacks every week, so they don't focus on that either. So in a way, Iraq is much more dangerous than the media lets us to believe.
Part of that is because the media can't get out.
Correct. Yes. Correct. They don't get out. And correct. Yes. And the other half of it is, yeah, there are schools, there are businesses, there's newspapers, there are those developments that are happening. But the flip side of it is Iraq now has more dropouts than they've ever had in their schools. Doctors sell the medicine at night to their night clinics where they have wealthier patients that will come. They'll steal the medicine from the hospitals and sell it to their wealthy clients at night. A lot of those rebuilding projects are sitting empty, not operating, and the Shiite mafia type hit squads control the oil flow on a black market mafia style enterprise and are putting those profits directly into their pockets. So yes, these good things are happening, but there's a flip side for every single one of those.
All right. And we're going to get to the black market, which is an important part of the story, which we're going to talk about in a couple of minutes here. But tell me someplace you went, and you were there for 4 or 5 weeks.
8 weeks total.
Weeks total. Tell me someplace you went where from sunrise to sundown, it was a good day.
Well, the great – I call it the Iraqi miracle is happening in the north with the Kurdish region. And I – again, I don't understand why the media doesn't cover more of that story, because the whether you're for the war or against the war, the one truly good thing that's happening in Iraq that is not going away is the Kurdish miracle. And the fact that they've had a 10-year head start to rebuild their country, to have their region partitioned, they have their own prime minister, their own currency, their own militia. They have rebuilt. They have a thriving economy. They have marble. They have wheat. They do sheep, and they're successful. They're happy. They're pro-American. I interview a woman in the film that said she'd give her life for George Bush. And
by the way, no American soldiers have died in that Kurdistan region.
That's correct. Absolutely. And there's graffiti on the wall saying, thank you, America. Thank you, USA. Thank you, George Bush. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And what they're really saying is, thank you for partitioning us to give us a chance to not be attacked every day and to get on with our normal life.
And they're building malls and kids are going to school, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes. I mean, I wouldn't say malls like Mall of America, but yeah, they're
that's
economy.
A good thing if it's not like Mall of America.
Their economy.
But I mean, there are businesses there and there's shopping, retail,
absolutely.
Restaurants, everything.
Yes. And the wealthy people there build houses completely out of marble. They use marble like we use brick and wood.
Mm-hmm. There have been some, like Joe Biden and others, who have said the way that we can fix Iraq is by just saying it's going to be three different countries now. We'll let the Kurds have Kurdistan in the north. We'll also set up a Shia area and a Sunni area, and we'll just take people and tell them, look, if you want to live in this part of the country, that's going to be the new Sunni Iraq. This will be the new Shia Iraq. This will be the new Kurdish Iraq. Could that work?
Absolutely. Not only could it work, but at the over 410 shows that I've done around the country and around the world, I advocate the breaking up of Iraq into three separate countries at every single show that I do. Iraq is a made-up country. It's no different than Yugoslavia. It's very similar to Yugoslavia in every single way. In the 20th century, the Soviet Union broke up into 18 countries. Five of them had nuclear weapons. India broke up. They broke off Pakistan and Bangladesh to head off a civil war. Yugoslavia broke up into, like I said, five countries. To head off to stop a major genocide, civil war, mass killing, gang rapes, and splitting up of countries works. You know, the British divided up the entire Middle East after World War I. When they came, no other country in the Middle East is like Iraq in that so many Shiites and so many Sunnis and so many Kurds, all three come together right there in Iraq. And Iraq must – not only must it be split up into three separate countries, but as soon as we go – it will split up into three separate countries. The Kurdish people have already split off.
Right. The Kurdistan is virtually another country, but they don't want complete independence because they're a little worried about Turkey.
Right. As a matter of fact, they call it Iraqi Kurdistan, and you put the stan at the end of it, it's its own sort of – they're saying it's their own de facto country.
Right.
Now, the million-dollar question is, what do you do with the oil? Because the Sunnis are attacking right now because they don't want to be marginalized out of the government. Why? Because of money, the oil. They want to be a part of the oil pie. So my solution that I present at all the shows, and maybe I shouldn't give this out over the air, but is that not only do you split the three countries up, but you multinationalize the oil industry and allow all three of the new countries to benefit and profit from, work in, maintain, and be a part of the oil industry, which it's not the most simple thing, but it can be done. And you give the Sunnis their big paycheck every month and send them on their way, and the same with the Shiites and the Kurds. Let them elect their own governments. Let them decide what kind of style of government they want to have. Let them raise their own armies. Let them negotiate their own peace treaties, their own trade treaties. I not only do I think it can work, but I'm pointing to three specific examples in the 20th century where it has worked and worked perfectly.
What do you do with neighborhoods in Iraq where Sunni and Shia live next to each other peacefully? They're friends, they're neighbors, they're babysitting for each other, they're working together, and they don't want to have to live in separate countries.
No need to force anybody out. It would be purely voluntary. If they want to go, they can go.
If you wanted to be a Sunni who lived in Shia,
sure.
Shiite Iraq,
yeah.
You could do that.
Absolutely. And if you are part of that very small part of Iraqi people who do say we get along with our neighbors and we've intermarried and our kids are mixed, fine, stay, no problem. But that migration is already happening in Iraq. Baghdad is already pretty much divided up between one side of the river of Sadr City, all Shiite, and the other side of the river where the green zone is, pretty much all Sunni. Iraq has already started this division as far as the diaspora of the people moving. And if they feel like they get along, then fine, let them do it. If they're too poor to move, perhaps there can be assistance programs to help them move to get back to these areas that they are, because the Iraq is more aligned along tribal, clan, and sex than they identify themselves as a country. Mm-hmm. This coalition will never last.
Mike Shiley's movie is called Inside Iraq, The Untold Stories. He'll be screening it tonight. Two shows at Washington University in the Graham Chapel at 6 and 8:30 tonight, followed by a Q&A session where he'll talk about this and many other subjects. And he'll also be back in town next Thursday at Fontbonne College at 7 o'clock at the Lewis Room at their library to see the movie Inside Iraq, The Untold Story. We'll come back and get some more stories from Mike after this on The Paul Harris Show. It's News Talk 1120 KMOX. In the studio today with Mike Shiley, who made a rather unique movie. You can't say rather unique. Made a unique movie. It's called Inside Iraq, The Untold Stories, in which he just decided one day to grab a digital camera and a used bulletproof vest and a fake press ID and go to Iraq and travel around for 8 weeks, seeing what he could see. He hooked up with ABC News while there, got himself a guide, and tried to see as much of the country from Kurdish north to the rest of the country as he possibly could. And at one point, not only embedded with a U.S. military unit, actually became part of the military?
Well, that was kind of my whole plan when I wanted to be embedded with the military, is I asked them, how long do most journalists stay with you when they come? And they said about 3 or 4 days. And I said, okay, I'd like to stay for a month if that's possible. And I would like to wear a uniform. I want to sleep in the barracks, and I want to eat the MREs. I want to become a soldier and see what the life is like.
I'm guessing all of that was easy except for the wearing a uniform. They don't really look kindly on that, do they?
Absolutely not. They had no problem giving me a uniform. Matter of fact, that's the easiest part about it.
Because really?
As a taxpaying American citizen, we have the right to wear the uniform. We cannot put any rank on the uniform. We cannot say that we're a colonel or a major, even though you can buy all those insignias in the store on base.
Really?
Yes, the real ones.
You can go to the PX and say, hey, what?
Well,
today I'm a major.
If you can get on base.
Once you're on base, you can't buy them. But you cannot wear rank, but you absolutely can wear the fatigues. And they proudly handed them out to me. I had my name sewn onto it.
Wow.
Shiley and Press. And it was a fun experience. And then I realized that 5 out of every 6 soldiers stationed over in Iraq work as support for the 1 out of 6 soldiers who are in combat positions.
Mm-hmm.
Most Americans don't realize that 5 out of 6 soldiers are in support positions, and they most likely do not get into combat operations. Now, some of them do, bleed over into that. But in general, 1 out of every 6, it takes 5 soldiers to support 1 fighter.
Okay. Did you get to see any combat?
Well, after about 3 weeks seeing the support system and filming some interesting stories about life on the base, I requested to be transferred to a combat unit. And they laughed a little bit. And they sent me out to the most dangerous combat unit in the entire country.
Hey, this young punk wants to see some combat. We'll show him some combat.
They sent me out to the most dangerous unit, the 3rd ACR, patrolling the Syrian border. They have the smallest force covering the biggest amount of ground with the worst things coming through the Syrian border. And when I went there, they said, the bad news is you can't go out with us. And I said, why? And they said, because you have to be a soldier in order to go out and watch us fight every night, basically. So I said, okay, well, how do I do that? And they said, if you pass a 90-minute training program on the firing range.
I'm sorry. You said 90 minutes.
90-minute training
program. Not 90 days.
No,
90 minutes.
90 minutes. This is a true story. And you could pass. So I said, okay, what the heck? I went out there, and I passed the 90-minute training program. I was approved to be a gunner loader on an Abrams tank. The colonel himself approved me to do that. And I just remember rolling out that first night with an M16 and a 9mm in my hand, wearing a uniform as a gunner loader on an Abrams tank, thinking, gee, if my mom could only see me now.
Had you ever served in the military? Did you have any military experience?
No, none. Not none whatsoever.
Were you scared out of your pants?
I was so scared. I think I needed some of those NASA Depends.
Okay, so you go out with them and...
So we go out and we go door to door. They're kicking doors down. They're trying to look for mortars and they're, arresting people. The next night we went out, we got into a combat operation called Harass and Intimidate, where basically they open fired on a village down a dry riverbed in the middle of a village in the middle of the night, just to sort of let them know that these guns are loaded, which is a horrible thing, basically, because they break all the windows, they shatter eardrums. I mean, You have no idea how loud the 120-millimeter cannon on an A1 Abrams tank is. It is so loud. As a matter of fact, the first time it went off, it broke my camera. It was so loud that it shattered the CCD chips on my camera.
Wow.
It is so incredibly loud, and it does a lot of damage. The next night, because of that harass and intimidate operation on the village, they were ambushed, and 3 soldiers were killed and 12 were injured in a 9-hour battle that they got into. So it does not win hearts and minds, definitely not. It does not
– What's the purpose of it?
I keep scratching my head trying to figure out what the purpose would be of the military open fire in the middle of a village down, you know, shoot basically down an alleyway or a dry riverbed or, a street, not to kill anybody, but just to have this – crazy show of four. I mean, imagine if the police did that on your block.
Is this someplace where they think there are some really bad guys, that Al-Qaeda has a presence here, etc.?
There's no doubt about it that there are bad guys there, but they're not all bad guys that live there. It's a border town. There's border trade. There's illegal things that come across the border. Some of it has to do with the political situation in Iraq. Some of it doesn't. Some of it's just illegal stuff like liquor or porn or whatever they come across that it has nothing to do really with the war in Iraq. It's just illegal, you know.
Now, you said they fired. Did you fire?
Well, yes. As part of being a gunner, I had to agree that if I'm commanded to fire, that I'm going to fire. That's part of the training program. And so when it was my turn to fire, I not only did I fire, but I filmed it, and it's in the film, and people can see it tonight and next week, the filming of it, because I wanted to know what is it like to be a combat soldier. And so to have the opportunity to do that, I definitely couldn't pass it up. Now, I made sure, of course, that I wasn't going to kill anybody when I pushed the button. And you can look through the infrared and through the night vision and the FLIR and all that and see there is no one living or human, you know, that you're going to fire at. So I knew that.
Well, what if they told you, you have to fire at this and we know that there are people in there?
Well, I believe that if we would have been attacked, I probably would have jumped down into the bottom of the tank. But if I were to defend my life and we were in a situation where we were ambushed, I, like any other human being, would absolutely fight like a cat to protect your own life and the lives of the people that I was with.
Is it true you got medals from the United States military?
Well, the funny thing about that is when I got back from that operation, I was pretty I was pretty shooken up. And the military, the 3rd ACR, the colonel of the 3rd ACR, awarded me what I believe to be the only civilian combat medal to have been given out in the military. Now, they don't call it a medal because I wasn't actually a true soldier, but it was an award, a recognition that they gave to me because of the combat that I did.
These guys were happy to have you there?
Absolutely. Well, the funny thing about it is when I told them I was making this whole thing into a film, into an independent documentary film, and that I'm just really a freelancer and not really affiliated with ABC News, the funny thing about it, they gave me another medal.
For
bravery.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I actually got 2 combat, one for the combat and one when they found out that I wasn't really with ABC News.
Have you run into anybody in the more than 400 showings of this movie who was part of what you were in Iraq, who has given you feedback on the movie?
Absolutely. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I used to do shows with some of the soldiers that I profiled in the film. And I mean, the one thing about it is, I mean, I know that's kind of a crazy story and there's some funny things about it and it can easily be misinterpreted. But at the end of the day, my promise to the soldiers was, do not sugarcoat the story. Sugarcoating the story is disrespectful to the soldiers that are sacrificing themselves over there, and it's disrespectful to the American people who are paying taxes and dealing with the losses and dealing with this war. And so the one thing I don't do in this film is sugarcoat the film. This is not a Michael Moore film. It's not a Bill O'Reilly film. It's just a view, the good, the bad, and the ugly of what's – you know, it's not the truth. It's a truth.
All right. I only have a minute before I've got to go here. So tell me a little bit about the impact of Western culture there. You mentioned porn is coming over the border, et cetera. And we always hear that from the extremist Muslims that is one of the things that they hate the most about what America has done to Iraq, that we have effectively brought America and the West into a country where they don't want it.
Absolutely. When we think of Western culture, we think of the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, 7-Eleven, late night TV, all that great stuff that we love. What really happens first is they get crime, prostitution, drugs, pornography. And those are the things that they look at as the worst part of our culture. They get first.
They are the worst parts of our culture.
Yes. And they get that first.
And does that make them hate us more?
Absolutely, it does, because that's how they see our culture. And then they get it, and it just reinforces that that is what the Western culture is about in their eyes.
This is a remarkable story. If you can go tonight to see the movie at Washington University, there'll be showings at 6 and 8:30 in the Graham Chapel. And then next Thursday, he'll be at Font Bonne at 7 o'clock in the Lewis Room at the library showing Inside Iraq. And if you can't get to either of those, InsideIraqTheMovie.com is Mike's website. Is there another way to get a – is there a DVD copy of this movie? Can we get it from Netflix?
Sure. You can get a copy of the movie on Amazon. Just go on to Amazon and search Inside Iraq, or you can buy it through my website.
Okay. This is a remarkable story. I'm happy to have met you. Thanks for coming in today.
It's an honor to be on your show.
Mike Shiley. The movie is Inside Iraq, The Untold Stories. This is the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.